This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
How about that for a week of White Sox baseball? White Sox fans, not too shabby. White Sox 6-1 since coming out of the All-Star break, and they started the Crosstown Classic Series with their rivals, the Cubs, in fantastic fashion last night, 12-5, and just absolutely opening up the good old can of you-know-what on the Cubbies. It was a fun day at Rate Field last night. Hopefully we can have another one of those tonight, and then maybe let's do it again on Sunday and even up the season series at 3 apiece. That's how I'd like to see this play out. But the White Sox, season high, 12 runs scored last night. Season high, 18 hits. Season high, 4 home runs. It was just probably the best night of baseball at Rate Field all season long. And on the heels of what the White Sox have done in Pittsburgh and in Tampa on their 5-1 road trip, it has White Sox fans, I would say, feeling a little bit optimistic about where they're going as an organization. It is a very important week as well because, of course, the trade deadline is on Thursday. And so there are a lot of things circulating around the White Sox because when you're 37-66, despite the good feelings about where they're at after the All-Star break, they're certainly in sell mode. You have to, if you're going to be a prudent organization, if there's players who are in the last year of their deal and they're players that can help playoff contenders and you can receive a premium for those type of players, it's going to be in the White Sox best interest as an organization to go ahead and move some of those players. But that doesn't mean that you can be happy, or you have to be happy about it as a White Sox fan. I certainly understand. There's one player in particular who has done a remarkable job of really endearing himself to White Sox fans in a very brief period of time, who we'll talk about here momentarily. He was last night's starting pitcher, Adrian Hauser. But before we get to him, let's relive some of those fantastic moments as the White Sox set numerous season highs. And it began early in the game. In fact, it began with the White Sox leadoff hitter, Chase Meidroth, going yard for the second time this season in leadoff fashion against the Cubs.
1-0 pitch, and Meidroth sends a high deep drive to left. It's way back there. It's gone. It's a leadoff homer, the second he's hit against the Cubs this year.
That was Chase Meidroth's third of the season, and it was a great way to get on the board early against Shota Imanaga, and the White Sox didn't let up after that. They just continued to roll as they added on into the first.
There's a swing and a line drive deep left center field, and Happ's going to play a hop off the wall. Slater scores. Caro on his way home. That is a two-run single, as Vargas ended up stopping at second. And Sosa makes it 3-0.
3-0 indeed. Sosa actually could have been a double, but Miguel Vargas did hold up at second base on that. But Sosa hustled back in to get back safely to first. White Sox end up scoring 3 runs there in the first. I know it was in some ways a little bit anticlimactic. It felt like the White Sox could have added on another run, but the good news is the White Sox did not wait long to add to the mix, because in the bottom of the seconds, quickly they got back on the board. And this was Colson Montgomery, who for the third straight game homered.
1-1. There's a high fly ball out into deep right field, and she's gonna go! A home run! Colson Montgomery makes it 4-0.
Not to be outdone by his buddy on the team, Meidroth. Montgomery said, "Let me join the hit parade." Lefty on lefty crime right there.
Colson Montgomery now hitting .273 with a .344 on base. And again, his third straight game with a home run as he pulled it down the line there in right field. And the White Sox were obviously cruising at that point, 4-0. They add another run in the second to make it 5-0. And then Austin Slater in the bottom of the fourth decided that he was going to get in on the long ball action as well.
Slater with a fly ball out into deep center field. Crow Armstrong at the wall. Gone! Slater with a home run. 6-0.
Yeah, it was on at that point. It really did feel like the White Sox were in great position, and it would have been disastrous if they weren't able to hold on, but it was never in doubt after that. Interestingly enough, the only person in the White Sox lineup at that point who had failed to do anything was Mike Tauchman, who then came to the plate with an opportunity to finally get on the board with a hit, and he certainly did.
Mike Tauchman, deep to right, and it's gone, and he's on the hit board.
He heard you.
9-0. That's a two-run blast.
Now, I'll be curious. Tauchman's somebody who would certainly, I think, be very appealing to a lot of contenders around baseball. Left-handed corner outfielder who can also DH for you. And, you know, left-handed hitting always valuable in today's game. The reality is, though, Mike Tauchman still 1 year of arbitration left remaining. So I'm not so sure that the White Sox are going to be enthusiastic about moving him. Certainly if somebody comes offering a very enticing trade package, then I think they'll have to strongly consider it just because of Mike Tauchman's age. But what he's done as a veteran lefty in that lineup, the ability to hit at the top, whether it's leading off, hitting second, or like he was last night, hitting in an RBI spot in the lineup, no matter what, he seems to fit nicely. And again, you can always use a lefty hitter who can get on base. He's got a 370 on base. And again, with his sixth home run last night, certainly has the ability to go deep at times. So all in all, another great outing by Tauchman and the entire White Sox lineup. And again, that was Mike Tauchman becoming the final batter in the starting lineup to register a hit. Every single person in the White Sox lineup last night who was a starter ended up picking up a hit on the night. The only people who did not were those who came in as subs, whether it was Josh Rojas, who ended up taking a walk and scoring a run for the White Sox, or Brooks Baldwin, who drove in a run but did not secure a hit. Brooks Baldwin and Rojas, actually the only guys last night who did not pick up hits, who did play. But again, they only had one at bat, so you can certainly forgive them for that. And then how about Miguel Vargas, who's turned around his rough, I'd say, 100 at bats or so, and he's finally come out of the break and made some adjustments, and he's back to looking like the player who was vying for an all-star berth, and he picked up another RBI last night.
And he swings and sends a base hit on the ground into right. Slater will score. 11-0.
11-0, and the White Sox would go on to a 12-5 victory. Adrian Hauser, who pitched brilliantly yet again, had six scoreless innings, and then finally in the seventh inning, the Cubs finally were able to do some damage against him as Reese McGuire picks up a home run in the seventh with a couple of runners on, and so it actually did make Adrian Hauser's performance look a little bit less than stellar, at least in terms of what we're used to seeing from Hauser. But 6 2/3 innings, three earned runs, all via that home run, gave up five hits, three walks, struck out three, but he did so economically yet again as he was able to go 6 2/3 and 83 pitches for the Sox last night and pick up his team-leading sixth victory. Remember, Adrian Hauser did not become a member of the White Sox until May 20th. On that date, the White Sox signed him officially, and then he took the ball and went out and shoved against the Mariners and picked up a win on the very same day that the White Sox signed him. And he has not looked back. And, you know, I'll be honest, last night very likely could have been Adrian Hauser's final start as a member of the Chicago White Sox because he has pitched so well. It's, you know, that's the only disappointing thing, is that when you start the season out the way the White Sox did and you kind of bury yourself in the standings, unfortunately, then the reality sets in when you're around the trade deadline here and you have players who have performed like Hauser has, and all of a sudden the playoff contenders are sniffing around. And that is the case about Adrian Hauser, who after another great performance and his sixth win, talked with the media last night, and you know, he had some family in attendance watching him pitch last night. That has been something that hasn't been the case all year because his wife was pregnant when when he signed with the White Sox, she was in her third trimester, so she wasn't able to travel from their home in Oklahoma with Hauser. So, you know, he had he was on the paternity list when his wife gave birth for a couple of days. But, you know, that's something that is very difficult sometimes for a player. Sometimes we forget, or we maybe divorce ourselves from the reality of the players are human beings and they have lots of stuff going on in their lives as well. Adrian Hauser having his second child with his wife who gave birth, you know, shortly after he became a member of the White Sox. So, you know, having a new baby at home while you're on the road technically with the White Sox because, you know, you can't travel during the season. So it's been, you know, up and down for him in his personal life, but obviously he's having a great deal of success in his professional life. And I think it was very emotional for Adrian Hauser last night, just dealing with all the trade rumors surrounding his name because he is pitching so well. And he talked a little bit about that last night.
Focus on right now. You know, my family's in town, so I'm going to go have a good time with them. If, you know, trade happens, it's out of my control. So right now I'm focused on Adrian Hauser, White Sox. And that's, you know, that's how I'm treating it, going day by day. Whatever's in the future is out of my control. And so from right now, I'm a White Sox, and I'm going to keep pitching like that, and that's just the way I'm going to go about my business.
Yeah, what'd that do for you to have your family in the stands tonight?
Oh, it was awesome. You know, baby girl's first time to be out there, so it was really cool. So, you know, it's special, but, you know, being able to have the whole family here is really nice. So being able to get them up for the first time, you know, she's a month old, and having with them in here is really special.
What strikes these emotions?
Being away from them so much, you know, it's been a tough year for us with bouncing around and excuse me, and being away from each other, but we're fighting through it, and you know, having the mirrors means a lot.
What does it mean what this organization has done for you?
Thankful they've given me the opportunity to pitch in the big leagues again, so you know, just, you know, trying to get that opportunity, and, you know, very thankful that I was able to get that opportunity here. And, you know, from that day, I didn't want to let it go to waste. So, you know, I'm working my butt off, putting my work in every day, and don't want to, you know, go back to the minor leagues. Want to stay up here and keep pitching up here.
So there you go. You could hear the emotion in Adrian Hauser's voice talking about how special it was to have his family in town to see him pitch last night against the White Sox crosstown rivals, the Cubs, and for him to go out and pitch pretty much just the way he's been all season long, I think was you could just hear it in his voice. It felt more to him to have them in attendance last night, and then again to do it where if you were at Rate Field last night, you saw the crowd in attendance. It was a big one. I think 38,000, if memory serves. I got to look at the exact number. But, you know, it was a huge crowd last night, as the Cubs tend to bring with them. And I think that extra energy cannot be discounted either for players on the White Sox who don't always have the opportunity to play in front of full crowds these days. But when they do show up, that extra added energy, you can thrive off of that. And I think that certainly was the case last night for someone like Adrian Hauser and the entire offense for the White Sox. So, you know, it was good to see that. And hopefully the White Sox can build on that yet again today and carry it over and maybe go ahead and sweep the Cubs. That's the plan here. I will mention that, again, it seems fairly likely that a team is going to want Adrian Hauser for the playoff push. And so, coming to grips with the reality, if that's the situation and the White Sox do get a good offer for Adrian Hauser, he will be a free agent in the offseason. I think what he's been able to do this year, you know, we'll see what happens, but I would certainly be open or encouraging the White Sox to strongly consider the idea of, if they do end up trading Adrian Hauser at the trade deadline, consider strongly bringing him back, because, you know, the success he's had with the organization has proven that they're a good match. And so we'll see what happens. You know, maybe he'll go on and have a great deal of playoff success if he ends up being dealt. Maybe he won't be, but it's just, the reality is, when a player's a free agent, even when they're, you know, it just makes a lot of sense for the organization to go ahead and build up the long-term assets. But don't rule out the idea that Adrian Hauser, the White Sox, should maybe just consider strongly signing him in the offseason if they do. Listen, even if they don't deal him, they should strongly consider bringing him back next year. But if they do, there's nothing that prohibits them from being in the Adrian Hauser business after the offseason. So something worth keeping in mind. One more I just wanted to play for you, Will Venable. He addressed yesterday afternoon during the pregame. Will Venable addressed what it's like with players in the clubhouse with this week now where the trade rumors are circulating. How does he approach it? What does he say to them? And he was very honest in his assessment of what you do with players as the trade deadline approaches.
I think everyone's situation is different, and I just want to make sure that, you know, each of our guys is focused on what they're doing to contribute to us winning a game, and that's really it.
Not looking for names, but have any players talked to you about it personally, about possibly being traded?
No.
How much you and Getz check, or do you check in with Getz during this time to see what's cooking?
I think we have a really good relationship where we talk about kind of the state of our group all the time, as far as, you know, potential deals and as far as what the trade deadline stuff means. There haven't been many conversations. I'm just kind of focused on what we got going on here, in the clubhouse and what we can do to go out there and win games.
So there you go, Will Venable talking about how they approach the trade deadline, at least in his first year as a manager, how he's approaching it. And being a former player, I think that obviously certainly helps him know the reality of the situation, that some players are going to be a little bit more anxious, a little bit more on pins and needles until the trade deadline passes, especially veteran players on this team. So not burying your head in the sand is the right approach, and just understand that, hey, there's a week to go. Your situation obviously could change if you're a veteran and you're playing well. There certainly may be a team that comes a calling. And again, all you can do, though, is put your head down and live it one day at a time and try and put your best performance out there and see what happens. That is the reality of life in baseball for the player. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark this Monday, July 28th, for Christmas in July, presented by Kordak. Receive a limited edition Aaron Rowan Christmas vacation-themed bobblehead when you purchase a specially priced ticket, limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we are going to deviate ever so slightly from White Sox conversation to something in baseball that occurred last night. A night for the ages by a rookie. We'll talk about that coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Now he goes inside, out deep to left. Forget about that baseball. Come on.
It's ridiculous.
His 20th of the year, make that 39 extra base hits for Kurtz on the year. And that is a screamer to left. 0-1 in the air to deep left. Houston, you do have a problem. His name is the Big Amish.
This kid is incredible.
10-2, his second home run of the night. First pitch. Oh, my!
Oh, my goodness. It's unbelievable. This kid is on another planet.
Swing and a drive. Deep to left. He's done it four times.
What a magical night for the Big Amish. Smooth as butter, baby. Turn it up! Incredible! Simply incredible!
So if you were unaware of what Nick Kurtz, the Oakland, the Sacramento Athletics, even though they don't officially go by the Sacramento name tag, they are the Athletics, so maybe I should just start calling them that. Nevertheless, the Athletics first baseman Nick Kurtz last night had a night for the ages, as he went 6-for-6 with 4 dongs, giving him 23 on the season. And oh, by the way, if you didn't catch the highlights, he missed a 5th home run by maybe a foot. It would have been his 4th home run of the game, but nevertheless, and his 4th and final home run did come off of a position player pitching, but Nick Kurtz, he doesn't need to apologize. That's not his fault. He doesn't pick the pitchers. But 6-for-6 with 4 home runs, never in baseball's 150-year history has a player finished a game with at least 6 hits, 6 runs, and 8 RBIs until Nick Kurtz did it last night. And his 19 total bases tied Sean Green's single-game record. Kurtz had one more RBI, obviously, than Green did in that performance. That is, you can make the argument, the best game a hitter has ever had. Last night, a rookie did it for the Athletics. So just absurd. Oh, by the way, if you think 4 home runs is kind of insane, the fact that Nick Kurtz scored 6 runs in the game is even more rare than hitting 4 home runs. That was just the 9th time in the history of baseball that a player has scored 6 runs in a game. And Nick Kurtz also, I remember talking a lot about him because he was promoted to the majors shortly before the Athletics arrived to play the White Sox at Wrigley Field. It might have been the first week when Kurtz, you know, was, or right thereabouts when he was promoted, and the White Sox, or the Athletics visited the Sox, and Kurtz was up at Wrigley Field. And I talked about him quite a bit because I knew he was a, you know, an impact hitter who was drafted in the first round last season. He was the 3rd overall pick. He actually was selected right before the White Sox selected Hagen Smith with the 4th overall pick. The Athletics took Kurtz out of Wake Forest with the 3rd overall pick. And since Nick Kurtz has kind of, you know, settled in and gotten his feet wet, since May 20th, Nick Kurtz is basically the best hitter in baseball. In 43 games, he now has, he has a .352 average, a .427 on base, and an .870 slug. And he's got 22 homers, 53 RBIs, and 39 runs scored. Again, that's in the last 43 games. So the kid is absolutely killing it. And as you heard Dallas Braden maniacally laugh at the 3rd and 4th home run in our highlights there, courtesy of the Athletics Television Network. And, I mean, you heard Chris Carey also on the call there, Chip's son, for the Athletics. And his nickname is the Big Amish. So that leads us to today's poll question, which Jack McGrath, who's producing White Sox Weekly along with the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brennan Riley, came up with. And what do we got, Jack? So lay it out for the folks. We're putting it up here. I don't know if it's up just yet, but it will be up momentarily. So what is today's White Sox Twitter poll question?
Well, as you know, there's a lot of nicknames that start with the word big. We have the Big Hurt for Frank Thomas. We have the Big Dumper for Cal Raleigh. And you have the Big Unit for Randy Johnson. So my question is, what's the best big nickname?
I love it. So that's going to be our Twitter poll question today. Feel free to go ahead and stuff the ballot boxes, White Sox fans, if you would like to. Obviously, the Big Hurt is an option. Although, you know, if I'm being unbiased here, I think the Big Hurt of the big nicknames might be the worst big nickname.
The Big Amish is great. A swing as smooth as butter. That's pretty absolutely good for me.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because I talked about Braden and Chris Carey. You know, the calls, if you saw the highlights, they're both churning the butter in the booth after every home run. So the Big Amish, the Big Dumper, the Big Units, and the Big Hurt. Feel free to vote on our Twitter poll question. We will give that to Len and DJ in the bottom of the 5th inning today. We'll let them vote. We'll see if they can be unbiased. And maybe we'll get a little preview from DJ as well. Darren Jackson going to join me here next after we take a quick timeout. But first, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTVC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
So there you go. We'll cheat. We'll preview the Twitter poll question with DJ, who was a former teammate of the Big Hurt. So he might be biased, but we'll ask him anyway. We'll allow him to vote. And Nick Kurtz, man, the way he's swinging the bat, he actually would fit right into the White Sox lineup these days. We'll ask DJ about how well the White Sox are playing after the All-Star break when we come back right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Mellor back here on White Sox Weekly as the best team in baseball out of the All-Star break resides at 35th and Shields, where my next guest is currently located as he's getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Cubs. Of course, we will have your pregame coverage starting at 5:30 tonight, and first pitch expected at 6:10, although there's a little bit of weather in the forecast, but right now it looks optimistically good to get things started on time. Let's bring in Darren Jackson right now on White Sox Weekly. DJ, is my assessment good? Are we looking okay at right field right now as I speak?
Yes, exactly. Everything looks great right now. They're getting the field prepared. There's been work going on out there. It doesn't look like at this moment there's any threat to the start of this game, other than the fact that the tarp is slightly pushed away from the sidewall, which is an indication it's prepared just in case.
Sure. I see it's savvy veteran like you, DJ. You've been around the game a long time. You notice those little things, which the average baseball fan may not be attuned to. So we like that. But nevertheless, it does look like it's better than earlier initially thought. So hopefully we can get this thing started on time. All right, so I was talking last segment about the Big Amish, which leads to our Twitter poll question for today. Early start. What's the best big nickname? Is it Nick Kurtz with the Big Amish? We also have, of course, your former teammate, Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt. We've got Randy Johnson, the Big Unit, or possible MVP winner coming up, Cal Raleigh, with the Big Dumper. What is your favorite big nickname?
Well, it has to be the Big Hurt.
Okay, you're biased.
No, and I'm going to break it down. I mean, you think about the other three bigs, right?
Yes.
You got the Amish, the Dumper. Those aren't necessarily compliments. The Big Unit's just a description of, you know, a guy being big. And then you talk about the Big Hurt. This is exactly that's the perfect description of what he did when he played the game. So to me, because of that, it's connected to what he did as a player. It's the winner.
Okay. I think you made a compelling argument, and you supported it with facts. So I will allow it and deem that an unbiased vote, even though I still might go with the Big Dumper. You may think that's not a compliment, but I think there's plenty of folks out there who think it's the best of compliments.
Well, look, to be realistic, that is my favorite of
okay.
the four.
See, so
it's
there
my
you go.
Favorite, there's
okay.
no doubt. Most entertaining of them. So
fair.
I'm just going with the actual best fit for the game of baseball, and it's got to be the Big Hurt.
Fair. All right, real quick, before we get to the Sox. What the hell? Nick Kurtz, man. Like, that is insanity. 6-for-6, 4 home runs. What's the best game, DJ, you ever had, even in Little League?
Oh, all right. Well, if we're going to go that far back, I'd have to go to high school. So okay. I had a game where I was 5-for-5 with a grand slam, and I threw a one-hitter. So that was my best game ever.
So there you go. If Nick Kurtz would have to pitch to beat DJ's best game.
No, but to think about, I mean, I don't know if I ever had a four-hit game in the big leagues, let alone 4 home runs and 6 hits, 8 runs batting, then 6 runs scored. And this kid's just out of college. Yeah. What are we doing here? I mean, this is a true testament that this guy is a superstar in the making. You can't do the things that he's doing in his very short major league career without knowing that he is somebody that's very special and going to have an amazing career.
Yeah, it's a great start and just a mind-blowing to the point where, you know, I was driving home and I was like, I got to text Len and DJ because you don't see this ever, 6-for-6 and 4 home runs, nevertheless, by a 22-year-old kid. Darren Jackson joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Nick Kurtz is swinging the bat so well, he could actually fit into the White Sox lineup these days, DJ. What's going on? What's the difference between this White Sox offense first half and now coming out of the All-Star break?
You know what? I think if you look at the adjustments that they've made to getting to the fastball, it's kind of self-explanatory. It's a team that wasn't hitting fastballs in the first half. And they had a meeting. They, you know, come to Jesus, kind of sit down and let's get this done kind of revelation. And next thing you know, they're doing it. And if it was that easy, I'm trying to figure out, well, why didn't we just do this after, you know, the first few
yes.
days of saying you're not getting to the fastball? But there's been so many things that these young players have had to go through this year and learn and adapt to. It's kind of hard to overwhelm them with everything. So they got to a point, in my opinion, you get to a point where the second half starts and you say, we've done so much already. We've learned so much. This is the next stage of tutelage from the coaching staff. And I think they're receptive. These guys are coachable. You know, they are able to take whatever was given to them by the coaching staff and implement it and make it work, because we're seeing a whole lineup now from top to bottom cover the fastball, get the barrel out to the fastball. And as you know, we've had these conversations all year long, you and I and Len, and even Connor when he's around here, is we've talked about the team not covering fastballs. You're late on them, reacting. That's not the case. Now they're covering fastballs. You know what that does to an opponent? All of a sudden they go, uh-oh, I need them to chase the off-speed stuff. And now they're missing with the off-speed stuff and pitching from behind. And now you're in a fastball count and they're throwing fastballs. So it's working in their favor either way.
So then, Darren, the logical question, the follow-up is, they've made this adjustment. Baseball is a game of adjustments, and we know that the opponents, they're going to start to get the scouting reports, probably already have them, and so the adjustments are going to come fast and furious at the White Sox here. So how do they continue to have this success, understanding that very soon they're going to be seeing a lot more breaking balls?
I think the key is to be ahead of it. So you just said it. The coaching staff and the players have to be aware that the league will make an adjustment back. So if you're ahead of that thought process, you're already preparing. You should be prepared for when it happens. Now, are you going to be able to execute? And all of a sudden, you are seeing more off-speed stuff thrown for strikes trying to get ahead. Are you going to be ready to cover that and knock them off first pitch hanging curveballs? They won't know what to do if you're doing that. So it's just the conversations have to be, this is what's going to happen next. Be prepared. And if you're prepared before it ever happens, then you're ahead of the game.
Darren Jackson joining me, Jeff Meller, here on White Sox Weekly as we're anticipating the White Sox and Cubs game number 2 of 3. First pitch coming your way at 6:10 tonight. DJ will be on the call with Len Casper as always. All right, DJ, so we saw another really nice performance from Adrian Hauser yesterday. Leads the White Sox in wins. He picked up his 6th, and that's amazing considering that the White Sox added him back on May 20th, and he immediately stepped into the rotation that day and pitched a great outing against the Mariners, and he really has not looked back. I played the audio of him in the postgame last night. He was really emotional because for the first time this season, his family was in attendance. I told the backstory about how his wife was pregnant when he signed with the White Sox, so she couldn't travel because she was in the third trimester. She had to give birth, obviously, before they could actually come. And now that his daughter is now a month old, they were able to travel to last night's game. But as good as he's pitching, the reality is that the White Sox record may dictate that they end up trading him because he's going to be a sought-after player, I think. So as a player who's dealt with that, who's actually been traded, how do you handle that? And, you know, we heard the emotion from Adrian Hauser. It's just been a great story. But the reality is the White Sox as an organization, how do they move forward with Adrian Hauser? What's the best thing for the organization?
Well, that I don't know. You know, that's obviously the baseball department and Chris Getz and decisions that need to be made. The only thing that Adrian can control, because if he's happy here and he's pitching well and he's doing everything to earn the right to stay here, is communicate that to the organization, is that you're happy here. And he understands the side of the business where, you know, he has value to somebody that's maybe contending. But if he's happy here, he has to make it known. He has to let them know, hey, I want to stick around here. I want to be part of this future. And you can't do more than that. That doesn't mean that an organization is going to say, okay, we'll keep you here. Let's sign you. That has nothing to do with it. But as long as you share how you feel, then you've controlled what you can control. Because I was the opposite. You mentioned I was traded at deadlines and stuff like that. Most of the time I went to organizations, I told them, move me. Get me out of here, because I wasn't playing or I wasn't happy there because I didn't get the opportunities. If I was happy somewhere and I got traded, then it would have been a little more devastating. Because you're happy there. And I think Adrian's case, he's happy here. He's turned his career around. He's been given an opportunity to succeed. He's taken advantage of that. I mean, could have easily, as Len talked about this many a time, been an all-star for this team this year. Had he just a couple more starts maybe, and then we find out that's not even really a matter of, you know, he could have been and should have been an all-star then if that were the case. But, yeah, last night's just another performance by a guy that's been relied on to be great all year long, and he has. He's been just that. So, as an organization, I would look at it and say, look, you still have a lot of young pitchers. You need veterans in the rotation to show them the way to be successful, and you need those conversations that veterans can share with the younger players that because you can't replace experience. And somebody like Adrian Hauser has experience, and that's really all there is to it.
Yeah, and he talked about being thankful to the White Sox for giving him the opportunity. He is truly grateful. And as you mentioned, he can't really control what they choose to end up doing, and it might be in their best interest to go ahead and move him. But if that's the case, the one thing I'll say is, you know, as well as he's pitched and he's at least expressed the idea that he's happy playing for the White Sox, I'm hopeful that if they get a trade offer and they end up taking it, it doesn't rule out the possibility of circling back with him in the offseason and maybe saying, hey, you had so much success here the first time around. You're a free agent. We'd love to have you back, to your point about you need some veteran pitchers. So that's my hope, is if it does play out that way, I certainly wouldn't hate the idea of bringing Adrian Hauser back as a free agent next year. But I digress, DJ. So what's it, the Cubs, White Sox, you know, we have the Crosstown Classic, obviously, extra set of eyes here on the Sox now with their rivals here this weekend. What'd you think of the crowd last night and just what it's like having, you know, the Sox and Cubs, even when the Sox are a bit down record-wise, to have them put on a performance like they did last night?
Well, the city wins, right? Because we had a sellout basically here last night, and half the ballpark's filled with Cub fans, and they're a first-place type team that's been great all year. And then the White Sox second half has already started as where we're a powerhouse playing great baseball. So everybody wins because, you know, the White Sox are not in a playoff position. But it's entertainment, right? And now you're getting this rivalry going again, and it's been unbalanced for too many years with the Cubs dominating. So you have nights like last night with a full house, and you see the emotion, right, of the young players being part of this. The leadoff home run by Mydroth, and all of a sudden you're going, look at this kid, how amped he is. He knows how big this is. He's hit two home runs in this series already. Montgomery hitting one out of here. Just all the offense from these young guys knowing this is the future feel of a playoff kind of atmosphere at this ballpark. So it's just kind of breaking them in, I think, to get ready for great things to come, hopefully in the near future. But for the city, I think it's a win because now it's exciting baseball on both sides of the city.
No doubt about it. All right, DJ, thanks for hopping on. I will see you at the ballpark in a little bit.
All right, Jeff, thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. That is Darren Jackson, of course, the voice of the White Sox with Len Casper. You'll hear him coming up later on as the first pitch scheduled to come your way at 6:10, of course. Pre-game coverage will begin at 5:30, but you're listening to White Sox Weekly right now here on ESPN 1000 and the White Sox Radio Network. Really quick, when we come back, I'm going to share with you a conversation that Dan Plesac, who was on the call for the television call of White Sox during their road trip, their very successful road trip coming out of the All-Star break. He joined Carmen and Nick Friedel, who was in for Yurko. So I'm going to share that conversation with you momentarily. But before we do that, we'll take a quick break, and I will get you a White Sox lineup as well, which has a noticeable absent in there, which I'll share with you coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Black and Abdallah weekdays at 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own hamburger. July's winner will work with the Chicago White Sox head chef to design and name their own hamburger that will be sold in the ballpark. The winner will also receive 25 tickets to the CIBC Fan Box to host their family and friends to go ahead and try that burger that they've created. Enter at whitesox.com/sweepstakes. I mentioned a notable absence from the White Sox lineup tonight for the second straight day. No Luis Robert Jr. And I do have the latest from Will Venable pregame. He said in regards to Luis Robert Jr. that he's still out of the lineup, still sore, but better than yesterday. He ran around, looks good, just not quite there yet. He'll still be out of the lineup, but available off the bench for the White Sox today. I just wonder, but nevertheless, you know, we shall see. I talked a lot about Adrian Hauser being somebody who has been in trade rumors. Luis Robert Jr. obviously his name has been circulating quite a bit in trade rumors for the last, I'd say year or so. Certainly into the offseason and spring training was talked about quite a bit. And he has been hitting really well out of the All-Star break before he had obviously yesterday off, and now again today is not in the starting lineup for the White Sox. Sox lineup looks like this. It will be Mike Tauchman in right field leading off. Chase Meidroth hits second and plays shortstop. Andrew Benintendi DHing and batting third. Miguel Vargas will hit cleanup and play first base. Kyle Teal behind the plate after the night off yesterday. Lenin Sosa plays second base and hits sixth. Colson Montgomery plays third base, bats seventh, three straight games with a home run. Michael A. Taylor will be in left field tonight, batting eighth. And then Brooks Baldwin plays center field and bats ninth for the White Sox as Aaron Civale will be on the mound for the White Sox as he picked up his first win last time out for the White Sox. And he'll try and win a second straight game for them against the Cubs tonight. Cade Horton, the Cubs rookie, will be on the mound for the Cubs tonight against the White Sox. So that is the pitching matchup and your starting lineup for the White Sox. Hey, Sox fans, new this season, save 30% off with the Summer 3-Pack. Lock in a Sox versus Cubs game and pick two more matchups that fit your schedule. Don't miss the Crosstown Classic and other great summer games. Customize your Summer 3-Pack today. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/3-pack. When we come back, I'll let you hear a conversation. Dan Plesac, who was on the call, the television call of White Sox, their last road trip with CHSN. And Plesac, very, very impressed with what he's seen from the White Sox out of the break here. I'll let you share his conversation with Carmen and Yurko coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on YouTube.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly, getting set for game two of three between the White Sox and Cubs at Wrigley Field after the White Sox demolished the Cubs 12-5 last night and continued their offensive assault on the opposition right out of the All-Star break. They've now scored 61 runs in all out of the All-Star break, far and away the most runs scored in all of baseball, and the teams that are in second and third place actually played one more game than the White Sox. They are just absolutely throttling opponents. We talked with Aaron Jackson about the difference offensively. DJ talked about the come to Jesus meeting that the coaching staff had for the White Sox with their hitters, and specifically about how they weren't covering fastballs, and that was a priority for them coming out of the break. And message sent, message clearly received. We shall see if the White Sox can continue this type of offensive production. I certainly hope that's the case because it has been really fun to watch the White Sox play baseball since the All-Star break. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark this Tuesday, July 29th for Seinfeld night. Receive a limited edition Robin Ventura Seinfeld themed bobblehead when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I mentioned Dan Plesac was on the last road trip with CHSN calling the game with John Schriffen, and he has been thoroughly impressed by what he's seen from the Sox offensively, a lot of what we've just talked about. But he joined Carmen and Yurko. Nick Friedel was in for Yurko, and Danny was very enthusiastic about what he's seen from the White Sox these days.
Danny, what's happening, my man?
Carmen, how are things going? I got to tell you, man, I would love to be at the rate tonight. I did with such an improved road trip post All-Star break. It's a different White Sox team, Carmen. I mean, completely different team. And they fell down in a couple of those games. They fought their way back. They faced three really good pitchers in Tampa. And I know it would have been easy to say, well, they swept the Pirates. The Pirates kind of struggling. Pirates just swept the Tigers. And then when you get to Tampa and you face three really good pitchers in a row, and they chased all three of them out of the game. So things are definitely getting better.
You made the point a number of times, especially in those last couple of games against Tampa, about the approach at the plate. And it looks like for the first time in forever, like that there's an idea, there's something being taught. This is how we're going to attack these hitters. And these guys are buying into it and they're doing it. Can you walk us through that a little bit, Danny, and what you saw that kind of stood out, especially from some of the young guys at the plate?
Okay, now I joined the team. The first series of games, I did road games. I did three in Citi Field against the Mets and three against the Orioles. And there was a lot of swing and miss. But now this was also pre-Colson Montgomery getting called up. pre-Brooks Baldwin coming back and being a significant factor, and the Louis Robert Jr. that's been post All-Star break is the guy that's in there. That player is in there, Carmen, somewhere, and he's starting to, like, they may have found a key to unlock this guy. I think one of the things that stuck out for me, they swung at so many non-competitive pitches and were get beaten by fastball. Mm-hmm. So the book on the White Sox up until the break was hard time hitting below 95 and above, a lot of chase, with the exception of Mydroff. Mydroff is a solid player. Yeah. I'm telling you. I don't know who developed him as a kid, his dad, his uncle, his coaches. He is just a baseball player. He's in the right place at the right time, but it was a lineup. And when you start going through 3 months of struggle like the White Sox did, man, it can just fester and linger. And John Schifrin and I had a great talk first game after the break. And Will Venable, by the way, is the right guy at the right time to manage that team. And they basically had a meeting, say, hey, we've got to make some changes. We've got to change our approach. And you could see instantly, game one after the All-Star break, I looked at John by the third inning. I'm thinking, pitches they're taking now, they were swinging at the first two road trips that I did. And I'm thinking, okay, I want to see if this can last more than one game. And it carried on to the second game. And then the third game, the Pirates starter had no hit. The White Sox threw four innings, but the approach was good. The at-bats were good. And then all of a sudden, a little looked like a harmless single to the right side between the pitcher and first base by Louis Robert, then a base hit, then a double, and then Mike Tauchman had a couple of huge at-bats. And right now, it's a team that's buying in, and they're sticking with that plan. And I'm going to tell you, they made three really good race pitchers work their ass off.
Yeah.
And they chased two good pitchers. Rasmussen had pitched game two, went four innings. The guy pitched a scoreless fifth inning in the All-Star game. He is a legit pitcher. And Shane Boz, who started game one, has had a good year. And Taj Bradley, who started the third game, he rolled through that first inning, but the approach was good, and they stayed with it. And I'm telling you, man, it is a fun team to watch. And I told John, when they fell behind 4-0 in the first inning, the approach was good. It was a 3-up, 3-down inning. But I said, this game is far from over. Their approach is good. In that ballpark at Steinbrenner Field, you get a guy or two on, you get a ball up in the air, and all of a sudden, and bang, they answer back with four runs. And it was the most exciting game. I got to tell you, the best part, the coolest part for me was the bottom of the ninth inning. I was as nervous broadcasting that game if I was sitting in the bullpen watching it, like pitch for pitch, ball one, wild pitch, getting out. And I'm telling you, it was so cool to, after the game, walk into that locker room and just to see smiling faces. And it is completely different mojo, Karma. I know I'm giving you a long-winded answer, but it's a different White Sox team that I saw in May that you're seeing now in July. That's all I can tell you. They're buying in. They're getting confident. And Colson Montgomery and Miguel Vargas, they've got some really good young players. And my take is this to the White Sox fans. You can't ignore 2024. It is what it is. It was a dreadful year. But don't blame these young players and get hung up on the negativity, because Mydroff and Montgomery and a lot of these young players weren't the problem in 2024, but they're going to be the solution moving forward. And there's lots to like. Now, there's going to be some ups and downs because you have a young starting rotation. You have a young lineup. They're going to go through some ups and downs, but the trajectory is trending upwards.
It's great to hear.
Dan, you mentioned Venable, and I'm curious, as you watched it now up close over the last week or so, what is it about his personality that has allowed this team to find its groove the way they have coming out of the break?
He has a quality that I think all of the really good managers have. He has a calming presence, and you have to have that with young players and young pitchers, because they see you pacing back and forth. They see you throwing your hat, getting angry, and it makes them nervous. It just does. I was a young player at one time, and I know what's that like when you're out there and you're kind of peeking in the dugout and you see the manager screaming at the pitching coach, throw strikes, what the hell is going on here? And the players feel it. I'm telling you, he is the right guy at the right time. He went through it. Listen, what that team went through last year, don't blame him. And he's the right guy. I love his personality, and yet he's a quiet guy. But when he walks into that room, and he walks into that clubhouse, he has the attention of players. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm a huge body language guy, and I don't say much. I know everybody thinks, hey, I have fun. I like to laugh and all that, and I do. But I get there early every day at 4 o'clock. I take the bus in, and I watch guys take batting practice. I watch them take their ground balls. These guys are working, man. It was brutally hot in Tampa. And Mydroff and Vargas, and they're out there, and they're working. They want to get better, and they're trying. The effort is there. And they really needed that road trip. I really think they needed something post All-Star break, something positive. And I thought one game I did on the West Coast trip, the Dodgers, and I did the Rockies. Man, they made Clayton Kershaw work for that 3,000 strikeout. And I'm telling you, Sean Burke pitched as good as you could pitch from the second inning. They used the opener. Eichert started the game. And then Burke pitched six really good innings. And then, you know, they lost that game in the ninth inning. And that was a tough game to lose. And I don't play for the White Sox. But when you're broadcasting and you have a vested interest, all the runs that were scored in that ninth inning, you know, it hurts. It hurts. And you could tell on the bus ride going to the airport after the game and going back to the hotel, like it was quiet. And that was a game there that they did everything right against a team with a payroll of $300 million, right? And they had everything stacked against them. You got a guy going for 3,000 strikeouts. Dodger Stadium was nuts, and they played pound for pound. They outplayed them for eight innings, and they lost that game in the ninth. And I give that team a lot of credit, these guys a lot of credit. They bounce back. They're young. They're resilient. They want to get better, and they needed something like that 5 out of 6 road trip to get some positive reinforcement that, okay, the work we're doing, it pays off. You could do the work, and you can go out and take your ground balls and take batting practice and do all those things, and you constantly lose. You get beat down. You need some reassurance that the work paid off, and I think this was a stepping stone to, I think they're going to have a better second half.
Dan Plesac there with Carmen and Yurko. Friedel was in for Yurko yesterday, but it was good to hear Danny rave about the White Sox, because, listen, if you've been watching the White Sox for the last 7 games since the All-Star break, you would rave about them too, because they've been the best team in all of baseball. 61 runs scored, including season highs last night in runs with 12, hits with 18, home runs with 4. This offense, again, and this was Dan Plesac talking about how impressed he was by the White Sox prior to their win last night against the Cubs. And I'm just hoping they can keep this going, because it has been fun to watch them play baseball over the last 7 games, and not just to say that it's just 7 games, because there's been a lot of things to be encouraged by with the White Sox this season. A lot of young players who have made their debuts, and they have proven, I think, that they can at the very least handle the majors, which is an encouraging sign. They haven't been overwhelmed, and a lot of them are making a difference. And now, again, coming out of the All-Star break, they've taken the coaching that Will Venable and his staff has given to them, and they've really applied it. And so hopefully once the league makes the adjustments to them, you know, aggressively attacking fastballs, they're going to have to be on guard for these, you know, the sliders and the off-speed stuff that is no doubt going to be coming their way in the very near future. But the fact that they've at least proven the ability to do some of this for a short period of time leads me to be encouraged that this could be the beginning of the turnaround for the White Sox as an organization. I, at least, you know, I'm hoping that's the case. I know White Sox fans out there would certainly agree with me. And let's hope that this could be a very, very good second half. That would lead us, I think, all to feel very good about the direction they're heading hopefully for the 2026 season. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, cookie, and a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. This includes all fees. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. Tomorrow, it is Hall of Fame Induction Day, and we have a big weekend for a former member of the White Sox. If you're unaware of it, I'll catch you up coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
A little tap. He's got a chance to beat it out. The throw. Save! Infield hit. Big argument. Big argument. That's a tough way to lose a no-hitter. But it happened. Holy cow. Let's watch it again. Watch the swings. He tried to stop. Dave Chalk makes it. The third baseman makes a fine pickup. Has a little trouble throwing, though. Watch the play. Is he safe?
Classic White Sox, 1970s. Harry Carey on the call there as Dick Allen raced to break up a Nolan Ryan no-hitter. Tough way for Nolan to lose a no-hitter, but don't worry, he'd be okay. He'd go on to throw seven of those things. But Dick Allen broke that one up, and the White Sox outfielder for three seasons who was the 1972 AL MVP will be posthumously inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame tomorrow. Induction ceremony will be tomorrow at 12:30 Central Time. That is broadcast on MLB Network. But you know, for the younger folks out there, they're probably not very familiar with Dick Allen because he did play for the White Sox in the 70s. This is long overdue, though, because Dick Allen really did excel in some of those stats that we absolutely adore today, but weren't necessarily lauded back when he played in the 70s. Like, Dick Allen had a .378 career on base percentage. I mean, that's, you know, lofty total there. In a 15-year career, he accumulated 58.7 career WAR, and he hit 351 home runs. Now, you know, I think like 351 is a great total, but a lot of times, you know, the barrier to like for people to be like, oh, that guy's definitely an automatic, you know, Hall of Famer is kind of that 400 mark with a, you know, he had a career .292 batting average, which was excellent. But again, a lot of times back in the 70s, if you're not a quote 300 hitter, you didn't necessarily get the praise that you probably deserved. But he took his walks, a .378 career on base, a career .534 slug, and for all intents and purposes, really did have his best season with the White Sox in 1972, his first season with the Chicago White Sox when he did win the American League MVP. He had a season where he had 8.6 WAR that year, hit 37 home runs. I guess maybe there were a couple seasons early with the Phillies when you can make the argument that they were maybe just a little bit better, a tinge better. But that 72 season for the White Sox, Dick Allen famously posed for the cover of Sports Illustrated with a cigarette in his mouth when the White Sox, the old red pinstripe, the White Sox uniform was all red with the red pinstripes, white uniform, classic look from the 70s. But that year, Dick Allen hit .308 with a .420 on base and a .603 slug. So both the on base and slug led the league. And of course, his OPS led the league that year with a .1023 OPS. And he had just a ridiculous season. Again, 37 homers, 113 RBIs for the White Sox that year. He led the league with 99 walks and was just, you know, really fantastic that season. In fact, a lot of people who grew up in the 70s, I believe my old buddy Fred Huebner, who I hosted plenty of shows with back in the day here on ESPN 1000, was a big fan of Dick Allen and, you know, during his heyday with the White Sox in the early 70s. And for a lot of White Sox fans who grew up during that era, he was their favorite player. So Dick Allen goes into the Hall of Fame tomorrow. Again, something that is probably long overdue. So glad to see that he'll have that. The White Sox will obviously send their congratulations to the Allen family. But all in all, Dick Allen spent three seasons with the White Sox from 72 through 74. And during his time with the Sox, he had a 307 batting average, a 398 on base, and a 589 slug. So just shy of 400 on base. Absurd. 85 homers, 242 RBIs, and 213 runs scored, and 189 walks in 348 games. So Dick Allen goes into the Hall tomorrow. Len Casper hopped on with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday, as he does each and every Friday, talking White Sox baseball. And, of course, the voice of the White Sox. Always love to share his conversations because Len, in addition to being a great voice for the White Sox, also is very insightful when it comes to all things baseball. So love to let you hear what he thinks about what's going on with the team. And this was his conversation with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday prior to the game against the Cubs, right here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
All right, Len, when you look at the week the White Sox have, you say this is a sign for?
Well, offensively, is kind of that's been the big question mark, right? In the first half, averaging under 3.5 runs per game. They were really struggling with the fastball. So I think just collectively, it's been a good start here. And then just the kids. Montgomery hit home runs in back-to-back games. Teal hit his first as a big leaguer. Edgar Caro's got a couple. So I think all of that stuff is really good, and the vibes have been very positive coming out of the All-Star break.
Len, we've talked about this a little bit, but how important is it for you, for other Sox fans too, that you're doing it and you're becoming more exciting behind the kids? These aren't like your veterans coming through. It's more about the kids, and you can sort of see how things are coming together. And they all won't be here, but at least, like, there's something to be excited about.
Yeah, I think that's right, Sylvie. I like the idea that while you can't necessarily say this particular player or two or three players have, quote, carried the team, it's been a collective effort. But Teal had the four-hit game the other night, great defensive play at the plate. I think Montgomery has been largely really good consistently since he came up in early July. Chase Meidroth getting out of a bit of a slump here. And then the pitching, the young pitching, that's kind of what the White Sox have been able to hang their hat on. Not only Taylor and Smith and Vassell, but guys who hopefully will be here either at the end of this year or early next year. So, yeah, I think that's the one thing that a lot of White Sox fans were looking at is, who's going to be here over the next 4 or 5 years to kind of form that next nucleus? And I think we're starting to see it.
Len, does this series have a little extra juice for everybody involved, the young guys, you, all of the fans out there?
No doubt. I always really like this series, and I think, you know, I've been calling games in this series for a long time. It almost never matters what the two teams' records are or how it's going at that time. Something weird always seems to happen. That's the first thing. I think the fans get into it big time. And I'm excited to see this weekend. And, you know, the White Sox coming off this 5-1 trip, you know, they're getting into that time of year where they can start to play spoiler a little bit. And the Cubs, looking at a Milwaukee team that's trailing right now, are possibly in a position to get back into a first-place tie. So I have a feeling Brewers fans will be watching this game tonight, oh, yes, rooting for the home team.
No doubt. Hey, what is it about what Hauser is doing on the mound this year that has made him so much more effective than in years past?
Fastball velocity's up a little bit. He's been really good when he's had base runners on. He always finds a way to get that double play ball or that big ground ball to get out of a mess. There will be speculation, as there has been, about him being possibly on that trade market right now. And so I think every start he makes, people wonder if it'll be his last. But he's been the White Sox best starter here the last 2 months.
Len, having been around the game for as long as you have, is a season like this is only 10 games, 10 starts, is this sustainable? And is this something that some people will look at and say, fabulous, but boy, history tells us this won't extend itself through the entirety of the season?
I think you make a good point. I think general managers, as they're looking around, they do look more big picture. It doesn't hurt that he's had this great, as you say, 10-start stretch, and he's had a long career. And I think when he's, let's put it this way, I would like to think that his stock has risen since he got here, but I also don't think that Adrian Hauser necessarily would be considered the best starting pitcher on the market, even though his ERA is under 2.
Right.
So we'll find out. You know, Eric Fetty about a year ago right now was one of the better pitchers in the American League. The Cardinals acquired him, and he got DFA'd the other day. So you just never quite know what you're going to get. But right now I think Adrian's feeling very confident.
I don't know what happened with Fetty and the DFA, if he accepted or if he's on waivers. But would that ever land because of the success they've had with getting guys back up and rolling, that if they trade Hauser and if they need arms to still pitch games, could they ever welcome Fetty back?
I think that's always probably a possibility. Because of the DFA, it's 10 days, right, to have him claimed, okay, or make a trade or something like that. Based on recent performance and the fact that he still owed some money, it might be tough for a team to claim him and pay him a couple of million dollars down the stretch. But I would say this, if he becomes a free agent, I think that's within the realm of possibility. Remember, the White Sox signed him out of Korea, coming off a career year. I think he really liked it here, so you never know.
Was, in your opinion, as we swing back to Colson Montgomery, do you believe that this is a Hail Mary that was completed with him going out to Arizona, redoing what he was able to do? And really, in the last year or two, he has not lived up to what a lot of people wanted him to be in the minor leagues, but he has certainly made an impact in his short time up now. Or do you believe there was a method to the madness on what the White Sox have done, and now they have figured something out with him?
I think it's nuanced. I don't think it was a Hail Mary per se, but I do think that there were some things that they needed him to sort out. I think he would have been here last year if he had performed better. But I also think that sometimes things do happen for a reason. And I remember being in Colorado about an hour before his major league debut, and I asked him point blank, do you think in the end that the struggles you've gone through might actually help you at this level? Because most guys in his position as big-time prospects, they never struggle in the minor leagues. And the one thing you know is when you get to the major leagues, you are going to struggle at some point. In the history of the sport, there isn't a Hall of Famer who didn't go through a rough stretch. He's now been able to kind of deal with those things, and he wholeheartedly agreed. So at the end of the day, all of the stuff that he had gone through the last 2 years might be giving him a little extra confidence, and I've been super impressed with how confidently he has played, very aggressively. He's got a good idea of the strike zone, and right now he's hitting for power, which this team really needs.
They do indeed need that, and Colson Montgomery is giving it to them. And by the way, that was before his third straight game with a home run last night. So it has been just a fantastic run for the White Sox coming out of the All-Star break. Let's hope they can continue that against the Cubs tonight with the game number 2 of 3 at Rate Field. Of course, first pitch coming your way at 6:10. The pregame coverage will officially begin in a little over half an hour at 5:30. And, of course, tomorrow it will be a 1:10 afternoon affair. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTVC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Sox and Bulls fans, join us Friday, August 8th for Bulls Night. Wear red, rep your favorite teams, and check out the City Connect crossover uniforms. White Sox 6-1 in those unis, by the way. Benny the Bull will be at Rate Field that night with a specially priced ticket. You will receive a limited edition Derrick Rose bobblehead. Be sure to stay for a post-game fireworks show presented by Fanatics. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Cannot tell you how many times every Friday night the White Sox are at home, I get a text from friends, family, somebody, how sweet they look in those red unis. Everyone is a big fan of those City Connect 2.0. And, of course, it seems to agree with the White Sox players because they're 6-1 when they wear those unis. And look good, feel good seems to be exuding confidence for the White Sox. The question is, do you overdo it? And do you just shift and go full-time into the red unis until you basically have an extended losing streak? Obviously, that would take a little bit of the fun out of the pop-up unis when you see them on Friday nights. But I digress. The White Sox they're finding ways to win out of the All-Star break, even when they're not wearing the red uniforms. So maybe it's just come out Friday on August 8th for the special crossover with the Bulls and pick up that Derrick Rose bobblehead as well. When we come back, big news around Major League Baseball as an MVP frontrunner is hitting the injured list, and Jesse Rogers, ESPN MLB Insider, is going to join me, and we'll talk about the latest trade rumors surrounding lots of White Sox players and just some of the dominoes that have already fallen. A noted White Sox killer, Josh Naylor, has already been moved. So what dominoes fall after that? We'll check in with the ESPN MLB Insider, Jesse Rogers, coming up next right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Stream the games live on the ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly as we're getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Cubs at Rate Field tonight. White Sox still have a chance to even up this season series if they can go ahead and finish off a sweep of the Cubs today and tomorrow. Jesse Rogers, ESPN MLB Insider, out at Rate Field. I will be making my way there shortly after the pregame coverage wraps up here tonight. But Jesse, first and foremost, before I get to all the Sox and Cubs and MLB trade rumors, I have to let the folks know that Aaron Judge has hit the injured list with a flexor strain. So big news there, obviously a front runner in the AL MVP race, him and Cal Raleigh, obviously. But Judge is on the injured list. So initial thoughts when you hear that the Yankees are losing Aaron Judge for at least 10 days.
Well, the way their season's going, it just got that much worse. I mean, that team is in trouble. Now, they were able to shore up third base a little bit with that Ryan McMahon trade, but you can't make enough trades to overcome the loss of a guy like Aaron Judge. So I wonder if this kind of changes their plans. Do they get even more aggressive? Do they get less aggressive? Because I don't know. I mean, the division might be slipping away. They got destroyed again today. They've got issues all over the place, and now you have to include the middle of that lineup as well. But that's the Yankees' problem. I mean, the White Sox have their own problems, but right now things are going pretty well for the White Sox. So
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, because I don't know what the hell you're talking about, because the team that plays at 35th and Shields is the best team in baseball since the All-Star break. No matter about the first half, Jesse. We're concerned with the second half. 6-1 and the best offense in baseball by leaps and bounds. I mean, but hold on. Before we get there, I do want to hit a few national things because, the Yankees, things are going sideways on them. But how about Nick Kurtz last night, dude? 6-for-6, 4 home runs. The Big Amish has been ridiculous. Basically, since May 20th, he's the best hitter in all of baseball. Like, I mean, what was your what were you people texting you about Nick Kurtz last night? Because I know you're plugged in around baseball. I mean, game was absurd.
Yeah, I mean, these young guys come up so mature and ready for the moment. I think we are going to see more and more kind of rookie milestones like this hit. You know, I think of whether it be a player coming over from Japan like Shota Imanaga's rookie season last year, or a guy like Nick Kurtz coming up, or these White Sox players making their debuts not that long after being drafted, right?
Yeah.
The Angels are famous for bringing up their players quickly after drafting them, but you couldn't do that 20 years ago. Guys were not ready. They come so polished now, so polished. It is definitely a young man's game, and that's why you see sometimes the middle-class free agents get squeezed out, because teams will just turn to their young players. I mean, the high school and college programs, as much as we kind of make fun of them sometimes for injuring, you know, overusing pitchers and things, these are big-time programs they're coming from, again, both high school and college. And so these players are more ready than ever. So that's kind of the big-picture thought on a guy like Kurtz doing it as a rookie, first rookie ever to hit 4 home runs. But that A's team has sluggers. They have sluggers. They just don't have enough pitchers to go with it.
and they don't have a ballpark that you can pitch in. But, you know, maybe they can outslug people moving forward.
Interesting. Jesse Rogers, ESPN MLB Insider, joining me here on White Sox Weekly as the trade deadline comes on Thursday. And, of course, the White Sox have a couple of interesting names that are rumored right now. Specifically, let's start with last night's starting pitcher, Adrian Hauser. He's been extraordinary, the White Sox's best pitcher since they signed him back on May 20th. He leads the team in wins with six, and we played the audio from him in the postgame last night. He was very emotional because for the first time his family was in attendance. His wife was pregnant when he signed. She was in the third trimester, so she wasn't able to travel until she actually had gave birth to their daughter. And so Adrian Hauser has been extraordinary for them. What is your thought? Did he pitch his last game for the White Sox last night?
Well, when would he line up next then if it was Friday?
Theoretically, I think he could pitch on Thursday, is the trade deadline.
Yeah, so the answer is yes. In my opinion, the answer is yes. I think he will be moved before the deadline. It's not a guarantee because Chris Getz has to hear the right prospect return. He's mm-hmm. not giving him away. Once you start giving players away, even if they're named Adrian Hauser, then you told everybody you're sort of open for business in that way. You have to do your business in the right manner, no matter the player attached. My point being, this could be a moment in time for Adrian Hauser, and Getz could hold on to him and look foolish at the end of the day because he's terrible the last 2 months and he walks away. But you just can't give guys pitching the way he is away. However, I do think that Getz recognizes the moment that he has with Adrian Hauser, and he's not going to let him pass him by. There's enough teams that need pitching, and he's going to hear the right prospect return come Thursday, Wednesday, whatever the day is, and he will make that deal. He will pull the trigger. But to this moment, teams are not giving him what he wants. And what he wants is probably, I'm just guessing here, a prospect from 10 to 20 in someone's farm system.
Yeah.
Probably he would love closer to 10 than 20. Teams are probably offering closer to 20 or above than 15 or 10. So, you know, it's that back and forth that's going to go on until the last moment. But we have seen Chris Getz hold his ground in a lot of ways. Pierre Crochet, I think he did very well now in hindsight. And I know a lot of people panned, and I'm not just going to bat for Chris Getz here, but Eric Fetty, Michael Kopech, what are they doing right now? I know a lot of people panned that deal. So I think Getz has done a good job of standing his ground for what he wants, and if he doesn't get what he wants, he's not going to pull the trigger. He held on to Luis Robert last July. He held on to Luis Robert during the offseason, and I think he will do the same with Hauser if he doesn't hear the right prospect back. But I do think he will eventually hear that name and pull the trigger.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Jesse Rogers joining me here on White Sox Weekly. And just to correct myself, Hauser lines up for Wednesday. So theoretically, he could start at Wrigley Field one more time against the Phillies before the trade deadline actually occurs on Thursday. But you also get into that weird spot where if you're hearing, you know, you're having some conversations with teams, do you really want to send Adrian Hauser out on Wednesday if you feel like you're close to a deal and, you know, risk potential injury? That's where you get it gets a little dicey, you know, when you're that close to the deadline, if somebody's interested in him. So we shall see. I did lay out the fact that even if they do end up trading Hauser, Jesse, I think you're absolutely right that you can't just give him away. But if they end up making a deal, it doesn't prohibit them from, you know, revisiting the idea of maybe signing him in the offseason, because it has gone so well for him here in Chicago that it could be a rental for someone else. And if he's been a great veteran presence inside the clubhouse. And, you know, maybe there's a reunion down here, you know, down the road if you trade him anyway.
Of course, that's possible, but that's not what's in anyone's mind right now, whether it be Getz or Hauser. And when you become a free agent, especially with the journey he's been on, you're probably just going to take the most security you can get.
Sure.
And, yeah, if it's the White Sox, then you go down that path at that moment. But no one's thinking that way. They're basically thinking, we found something here that no one thought we could find materialize out of thin air. I mean, the Cubs had Adrian Hauser last year in AAA, didn't like what they saw. They loved what they saw last night. The Cubs would be one team that would line up for him, but that price has to just be right, and that'll probably happen late in the whole process.
What about Luis Robert Jr., who yet again is not in the lineup tonight? Now, Will Venable said that he is progressing, just not quite where they want him to be, but he's available off the bench. So what about Luis Robert Jr.? Because he's been the name who's been swirling in trade rumors basically since last deadline.
Yeah, not dissimilar to what we've just been talking about. Not going to give him away for a bag of balls. I mean, there's that thing about, and you and I have talked about it, would they pick up that option?
Yeah.
I think the Sox are trying to portray that they will, but I don't think that's Jared Reinsdorf portraying that, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably people under him. My point being, at least that gives the Sox some leverage. If teams are like, hey, he's going to walk anyway, you're not picking up that option. We want him for you know, a C prospect. You may as well give him to us. So I think they're trying to walk that fine line of, hey, we might pick up that option. We don't have to give him away. But there are some teams, the Mets, maybe the Phillies, maybe the Padres, interested. There's Cedric Mullins that's out there as well. So another one that I think Getz is just going to wait it out. I don't think the groin tightness makes a big deal unless he just doesn't come back over the next week. Everyone knows he's somewhat injury-prone at times. They know the risk they're taking and picking him up. And then they can turn down the option, and so it won't cost them $20 million next year. So I think that comes down to the wire as well. And again, another example of Getz not just giving a guy away. The return on him is iffy, you know, like what is he exactly? But he got hot in July. That helps. It would be helpful if he's healthy here, but teams know what they're getting into. So we'll see how that plays out. But there's a little bit of a market for him. There is. And I put the Mets and the Padres in the mix more than any other two teams.
How about this one, Jesse? Because we know that bullpen help is always sought after at the trade deadline. But I think some Sox fans may have seen this nugget in Ken Rosenthal's column on The Athletic yesterday, and immediately their minds were blown. And I'll just read it quickly for those who may have missed it. This was from Rosenthal last night. Perhaps the more intriguing development with the White Sox is that teams are, quote, all over them about rookie right-hander Grant Taylor, according to a club source. Taylor, the team's second-round pick out of LSU, has struck out 23 and walked 6 in 18 and a third innings. His fastball averages 99 miles per hour, putting him in the top 2% of the league. The White Sox, the source said, are uncomfortable even talking about Taylor. He has stabilized their bullpen, allowing other relievers to settle into suitable roles, and he could be a starter for them in the future. Listen, we know a guy who's got 6 years of control beyond this year is often a guy who's untouchable, but just the fact that Rosenthal mentioned his name in his column is interesting to me. What are your thoughts about the idea of Grant Taylor even being, you know, thrown out in trade discussions?
I mean, obviously a different level here, but it reminds me last year of Mason Miller. Just people kind of threw it out there. And the A's had no intention of trading him in his, was it his rookie season last year or something like that, very yeah. early in his career. I almost view it the same way. I mean, I really haven't even inquired about the White Sox young players. They'd have to be blown away and fill a weakness to trade a player like Grant Taylor. Like, I haven't even investigated them flipping any of your young players because I just don't see that happening. It's the same. I don't see Mackenzie Gore being traded. I don't see Joe Ryan being traded. People float these things out. There are blockbuster deals. Once in a blue moon, it happens. I'm not going to say never. I'm not going to say 100% no on these things. But I'd be very surprised if the Sox trade any of their young players right now. They're trying to figure out exactly who they are. And there'll be a point in time in terms of flipping some of them. But we're not quite there. We're not quite there yet.
I got two quick names for you before I spring you. Jesse Rogers at Rate Field here joining me on White Sox Weekly. Okay, so Eugenio Suarez, obviously the biggest bat who seems to be available because the Diamondbacks are out of it. And also Sandy Alcantara. He has 1 year remaining after this season, so he's not necessarily just a rental. So what about those two, your best hitter and then the best potential upside pitcher who could be available at the trade deadline?
In both cases, especially Alcantara, the price has to come down. The ask is enormous, and I get it. He's got some years left under his deal, but he stinks right now. He'll have a good start here and there, but you take the season in total, the ask doesn't match how he's pitching. The ask matches him winning the Cy Young Award. And it's almost similar to Suarez, Kelly, and Gallen right now. Big asks by the Diamondbacks, even though they're rentals, so it's relative. But all these prices are too high for teams. They need to come down. And if they don't, we're going to see a lot of minor trades for like the Josh Naylor trade. I feel like it's almost a minor trade. You know, he's not the biggest name, but he was a good player in a smaller market sense, meaning first base, not a lot of first basemen available or needed. So you get a top 20 prospect deal, not a top 10 prospect deal. So that's where I could tell you. I mean, these prices are just still too high. I could tell you there are frustrated GMs, buyers that just can't pay the price right now. They're going to have to wait till late next week and see if those sellers start to change their tune.
All right, Jesse, fun one as I spring you here. We ask today, in light of Nick Kurtz's big game last night, which big MLB nickname is your favorite? The options: the Big Amish, which is Nick Kurtz; the Big Dumper, obviously, which is Cal Raleigh; we've got the Big Hurts, Frank Thomas; or the Big Unit, Randy Johnson. What is your favorite big nickname?
I guess the Dumper. That's kind of cool. I mean, the Big Dumper, I think that's it. I think that's my favorite one. I mean, those are all pretty good, though. I will say that. Those are all pretty good.
It feels
but
like
I got it. You know, the Big Dumper. Come on. How can we not like that one?
It feels like if you just throw a big on in front of it, it becomes a better nickname. All right, Jesse.
I was going to say, Big Jeff. Let's
there you go
with that for now on. Big
all right.
Jeff, host of White Sox Weekly.
Works for me. Thanks, Big Jesse. Appreciate your time, bud.
You got it. If the Sox are throwing a fastball, it's going to get hit hard these days. Watch for that again tonight.
All right. Take it easy. Jesse Rogers out at Rate Field. I'm going to go. I'll probably catch up with him when I get out to Rate Field after our pregame coverage wraps up. Pregame starts in about 12 minutes from now at 5:30. White Sox and Cubs coming your way. First pitch at 6:10. Of course, Len and DJ will be up right around 6 o'clock tonight as we get set for game number 2 of 3 at Rate Field, as the White Sox still have a chance to even up the season series if they can sweep the Cubs. It was a good start last night, 12-5 thrashing of the Northsiders, and let's hope the Southsiders can continue that mojo tonight and well into tomorrow, as they have been the best offense in all of baseball out of the All-Star break, scoring 61 runs, which is by far and away the most in baseball over that period of time. And by the way, the teams that are in second and third behind the White Sox have actually played one more game than them. So they have been on an absolute torrid pace. And as Jesse mentioned, if teams are throwing fastballs to the White Sox these days, they are crushing it. And let's hope they can continue that tonight. Sox fans receive up to 35% off a 20-person suite on select games with the Summer Suite Flash Sale. Enjoy a game day tailored to you and your guests with customizable food and beverage options, parking, and more. Don't wait. Offer ends August 1st. So for more information, go ahead and purchase your suite. Visit whitesox.com/flash sale. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll get you set for our pregame coverage and a couple of firsts for a couple of White Sox rookies. We will explain coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Third time he's worked for the Rays. There's a swing and a deep drive to right. If it's fair, it's gone. It's the first career homer for Colson Montgomery, and they're within a run. Teal smokes one in the air, deep to right, and it is gone! He's done it! First major league home run, Kyle Teal. He's the last guy to check it off the list.
And congratulations, Kyle Teal.
Yep, a couple of firsts this week, as on Tuesday, Colson Montgomery hit his first major league home run, and then Kyle Teal followed that up on Wednesday night in Tampa, off day on Thursday. And, I should mention that Colson Montgomery homered in Kyle Teal's first career home run game. Colson Montgomery had his, you know, two in a row, and then off day on Thursday, and then Colson Montgomery followed it up with a third straight game with a home run last night for the White Sox as he continues his impressive start to his career. So that was a fun night yesterday as the White Sox had season highs in runs scored with 12, hits with 18, and also hitting a season-high 4 home runs last night the White Sox did against the Cubs. So that was fun to see. Some news for the White Sox in the minor leagues as Jacob Gonzalez has been promoted from Double-A Birmingham to Triple-A Charlotte as he will play for the Knights now. So there's some good news for Jacob Gonzalez. That is going to do it for this week's edition of White Sox Weekly. Want to say thank you to Darren Jackson and Jesse Rogers for joining me as guests. Of course, we let you hear from Dan Plesak and Len Casper as well. Thank you to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brennan Riley, and thanks to Jack McGrath for producing as well. We will get things going with your pregame coverage here momentarily as the White Sox and Cubs will get set for game number 2 of 3 right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.